11 taunting calls the first 2 weeks of the season matches the season total for last year at 11. Guys, wake the fuck
That's
up,
bananas.
NFL. Stop
That's
it.
Bananas.
Stop it. Listen, yeah. Some of these calls Jeez. Are so insane. And Pete Carroll said it best. These guys are working their ass off, especially the defenders. They get like 10 chances to celebrate for how many reps they get per season. Let him just celebrate a little bit. It's one thing to mock an opponent, get in his face, but when you're reacting sure. like with emotion and you might direct it at the player you made a play on, keep the flags in the pocket, refs. Stop it. Stop
We're not
it.
Talking about spiking footballs off a guy's helmet here. We're talking about just a little jawing back and forth after a big gain or something like that. That's been going on for like, what are we doing here? Like, what are we doing?
Someone got it for spinning the ball on the ground. It wasn't even directed towards anybody. I mean, that's just a natural celebratory reaction. Even Bill Belichick, when he had that documentary crew follow him around when they're in the team meeting, he's yelling at his players on defense like, hey, so-and-so just made a tackle. I want all of you going to him and congratulating him. You should celebrate when you do good things on the football field because you're trying so hard to get there. If Belichick's for it, then I think the NFL should be Absolutely. For it, but that's just me.
Who you betting on? Always on black, fat stats in the pocket, whole squad, fast tag. Send the bookie, tell him bring it from the bag. No, we coming for the bag.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, to the few in attendance and the thousands listening around the world, let's get ready to gamble. My name is Tony Cavallo. As always, I'm joined by Matthew Dangles, D'Angelo Antonio, Schaefer the Sharp, Drew Schaefer Crookson, and we are the West Coast Gamblers, the only gambling show that makes you money, a proud member of the Evergreen Podcast Network. And when I say in the intro that we're the only gambling show that makes you money, I mean it, because this show went 15-6. Woo! In week two of the NFL season. 15-6. Each one of these gamblers you could have tied a bow to and won money with them. We were 2-1 on Thursday night football. We were 3-0 on Sunday night football. Al Michaels is calling us for the leans. 15-6 in week two. We are a profitable show, the only gambling show that makes you money. And while we might not be making these gambles today, today's more of a recap. Today's more of an entertainment show. You better be coming back to listen on Thursday because we are going back to the well. Each of these hosts are going to be breaking down Wednesday, week three of the NFL slate and giving you bets that are going to be winners. Am I right, boys, or am I right?
Guys, awesome job. Hey, collectively, a little golf clap for the team. A little golf clap for the team. Good job, boys. Well done. 15-6.
Well Hard done. To argue with the numbers, fellas. Hard to argue with the numbers and the success. We did an excellent job this week. Lots of green on my show notes as I'm going down my bet slip, highlighting everything we hit. Makes us look good, and our listeners get to eat too. Right? So everybody wins.
I made so much money I could finally get a haircut, Dangle.
Yeah. And Tony, I'm here to tell you, it looks great. It really does. Looks great.
I was disappointed to see that Aaron didn't also get a haircut with you when we saw him on Monday Night Football this past week. He still seems to be rocking the Hawaii Shailene Woodley and Miles Teller hair. Summer Aaron don't care, and apparently the Packers don't care what I think either, but you guys didn't coordinate your haircuts? You didn't link up and decide to get you know your fades at the same place at the same time.
Let me tell you, we're both feeling pretty good Tuesday morning.
Yeah, but Dennis, hey, like, I think the hair. Let's give Rogers a little shout out with that cover. My son Cole, who's less than 3 months old, is now 7-3 in the circuit contest. It's his picks. You know, people think I'm behind it. You know, I might give him some advice, but I'm the dad. That I'm gonna let my son do what he does. So he's less than 3 months old. He's 7-3, hitting 70% in circa. Colt, man, he's killing it.
Not without a little bit of a sweat, though, there from the Detroit
Absolutely.
Lions at the very end, pushing
oh
it. I was enjoying watching Pat McAfee sweating his own spread on the Manning cast. He clearly took the Lions at 11.5, and they were threatening that with that potential last touchdown there. But the Lions did exactly what you'd expect them to do, and fortunately for bettors, the spread hit.
Now, as you can see, Drew is not in his normal recording location. He is actually in the heart of all sports gambling, Las Vegas. And, Drew, you gave us a little bit of insight on this, but I want you to open up the world to the gamblers out there everywhere. Some of those states that have legalized gambling and still the dream is to go to Vegas to place some bets in the sports gambling world. Drew, tell us why you think it's not as all golden as it used to be out there.
Guys, I hate to say it, but I believe drumroll, please, the Dream is dead. It's so bizarre.
No, I mean, listen, say it ain't so.
I'm at an undisclosed location, and it rhymes with Match Regis, okay? And I am in the desert. I have mountains behind me. Got a call and said, hey, I'll be there. But it's so weird, boys. I go down the sports book, and like I said in our text thread, there's nothing like just throwing cold, hard cash to that ticket counter and getting that ticket.
Yeah.
Ticket cost, you know, blank to win blank. I love that feeling. But I'll admit, I mean, the variety here is scarce, and these numbers, they aren't good. I mean, you can get better numbers, shop online. I will say I was lucky enough to be profitable tonight by taking the over as the king of the coast, my best total, and a TJ Hockenson prop. I did ride Aaron Rodgers over, which did miss, but it's just a different feel, guys. I mean, I'm telling you what, being in Michigan, having the online betting completely legalized, and it's just incredible. I mean, again, the excitement's still there, but the actual, I guess,
when you can do it from your couch, the glamour is a little bit gone.
Exactly.
Do you think maybe the fact that you're not finding as good numbers in Vegas as you used to, and obviously there's no point of comparison from earlier, but I wonder if it has something to do with, like, it's a tax on the experience. They're probably trying to make money off of people who don't know any better, A, because they're in Vegas, and why the hell not? I'm just going to throw some money down at the sports book. But I also wonder if they, you know, Vegas knows about, I mean, in a lot of these sports books, I guess, have online ventures too, but I wonder if they're sort of thinking, we're going to put a tax on the actual experience of betting in person at the sports book in Vegas. I don't know. I don't know if that's the feeling you get.
Me and Dangles are just jealous because we're out here just waiting with bated breath. Because again, this show went 15-6 in week two on Sunday, 15-6. And Dangles and I, well, we made money, but legally we aren't allowed to do that in the state that we live in. And it's just a little bit annoying, just a tiny, teensy, tiny, teeny, tiny little bit annoying. Again, our Thursday show is going to be where we'll be making all of our picks. The Thursday night lean, the Sunday night lock, the King of the Coast, which, by the way, Drew, congratulations. You are this week's winner in King of the Coast. You went 4-1 and you King of the Coast picks, accumulated 7 points. Dangles, you were second place. You got 6 points. Back up that Brinks truck. You hit bet. And you were the only one out of this crew to hit the Brinks truck bet this week. You also started 1-4 and built your way back up, my man. Hell of a ride.
We've
You're
been
on
down
the winning
before.
Track.
We got to get back up. You got to get back up when you fall down. You got
to
get back up.
I had
up.
A winning record as well. Only accumulated 5 points to the game that we're playing, but we killed it on Thursday night. Me and Dangle still undefeated on Thursday night. All of us killed the Sunday night bets. We're having fun here, boys. I'm very excited. Very excited.
Quietly, guys, I think you guys might be our resident prop specialists. You guys are finding props on the primetime games and exposing them. So I'm happy to see that. And while I was trying to find the word convenience, Tony, while my microphone came unplugged, as we are in a live show at an undisclosed location, I was going to say this. Yes, variety, Dangles, and convenience. When you have an online shop and you have multiple books, it's just different. But I will say, cashing those tickets tonight, there's nothing like getting that cash back, baby. It's the best.
So today's show, we are going to have the Dr. Dangles segment coming up where me and Drew, we have some ailments that only Dr. Dangles can heal. We do have a lovely guest coming on the show back from our MFK divisional previews. Mr. Fernando Ramirez is going to be here to talk about that Chargers-Cowboys game. That was just, from the second quarter on, absolute chaos when it came to the referees and interesting calls. Mike McCarthy...
Well, I mean,
I'm just so happy he's not in Green Bay anymore.
Holy shit. What is he doing?
And then we're going to end the show with everybody's favorite segment. That is the Gravestones game, where each of us kill a team saying they won't make the playoffs this season. But, yeah, we already talked to Fernando. We're doing the show a little bit out of order today. So I do want to say we didn't get to talk about McCarthy's just idiotic play calls near the end there. Drew, you weren't with us when we interviewed Fernando, but what's your take on how McCarthy almost really threw that game away, making his kicker take a 56-yarder when he had plenty of time to advance the ball more?
Truly unbelievable. Tony, I mean, like, it wasn't even like the results, is the fact that he had some kind of like excuse, like the play clock went out and Kellen Moore was blocked by a camera guy. Like, what in God's name? And I forget who said, maybe Ryan Clark on ESPN. If you watched Greg Zuerlein kick last week, you would damn well know 56 yard field goal is not in field goal range for him. Now, he made it and he bailed McCarthy out. We know,
nailed it.
We know he's Greg the Leg. We know he has the distance, but clearly this guy is in Justin Tucker right now, dudes. Like, what is he doing? So, the fact that McCarthy got bailed out, and I reluctantly did take the Chargers at a good number in a contest, I was very upset with that. And I'll say, without hearing Fernando speak, which I'm very excited to, I got to say, guys, not to take anything from the Cowboys, but that was kind of same old charges for me. I mean, turnovers in the red zone. It's like, how did they let that game slip away? I was a little alarmed that they could not close that game out. And I was quick to say the Chargers are a different team after week one, but after week two, my God, that had Anthony Lynn era written all over it, didn't it?
It really did. And I mean, big matchup coming up this week, Chargers and Chiefs, both of these teams 1-1. We dive into it with Fernando about how this is a big time week three matchup coming in. Yeah. Can't wait to see it. But Dangles, news just came in. Zach Wilson just threw another interception to your New England defense.
They got him a lot this past week, making my season-long over for J.C. Jackson on interceptions looking very good. He got halfway
nice job,
there in that game on Sunday, 25-6 was that final. And look, again, you know, I liked they brought a lot of pressure against him. The Dolphins brought a lot of pressure against Mac, and the Jets brought a lot of pressure against him as well. And he's showed poise. But I'm a little bit, it's not panic meter time yet, but I'm a little concerned about how reluctant, tentative they seem to move the ball down the field. Mac not taking a lot of shots down the field. Maybe it's because he doesn't feel like he has the guys, but I don't know here. One thing I did love, and I will say that made my heart so happy, was on that touchdown run by Damian Harris where Mac comes flying in from 20 yards down the field to push the pile over the end zone. That was exactly what you want to see out of your rookie quarterback. Belichick loves that kind of hustle. Tough game for Zach Wilson, and it doesn't get any easier next week when they fly west to go to Denver and take on a very formidable Denver Broncos defense. And Tony, you mentioned the refereeing, the play calls, and I know that I've been noticing on Twitter over the last couple of days and in other social media circles a lot of vitriol going towards the NFL for the way that referees are calling taunting this year. And they're a lot more picky about it. Keenan Allen got called for it in that Charger game on an early drive. There were a number of calls this weekend where I feel like I found myself going, really? Like,
I have a take on it.
You know, it's already been the no fun league. I'm sure you do. It's already, we know this is the no fun league to begin with, but like, I don't know. It seems like we're getting a little bit excessive here.
In case you wonder, Drew has something to say on it, Dangle.
11 taunting calls the first 2 weeks of the season matches the season total for last year at 11. Guys, wake the fuck
up,
NFL. Listen, some of these calls are so insane. And I, Pete Carroll said it best. These guys are working their ass off, especially the defenders. They get like 10 chances to celebrate for how many reps they get per season. Let them just celebrate a little bit. It's one thing to mock an opponent, get in his face, but when you're reacting like with emotion and you might direct it at the player you made a play on, keep the flags in the pocket, refs. Stop it.
We're not talking about spiking footballs off of guys' helmets here. We're talking about just a little jawing back and forth after a big gain or something like that. That's been going on for, like, what are we doing here? Like, what are we doing?
Someone got it for spinning the ball on the ground. It wasn't even directed towards anybody. I mean, that's just a natural celebratory reaction. Even Bill Belichick, when he had that documentary crew follow him around, when they're in the team meeting, he's yelling at his players on defense, like, hey, so-and-so just made a tackle. I want all of you going to him and congratulating him. You should celebrate when you do good things on the football field because you're trying so hard to get there. If Belichick's for it, then I think the NFL should be for it, but that's just me. I will say, Dangles, I'm very happy and surprised that you are that direct with your criticisms of the New England offense. I thought it would be all hunky-dory with New England here because you're correct. Mac Jones is doing well. Yeah. He's still making some rookie mistakes, but there are plays down the field that he is not going after.
Yeah.
But then again, Zach Wilson, Robert Saleh comes out and says we need Zach Wilson to accept being boring on the football field. And Mac Jones is absolutely okay being boring out there. Even on the trick play where they had, I think they gave it to James White, then James White throws it back to Mac Jones. He threw the 10-yard out route on that. Granted, wide open first down, but if you look at the game tape, Nelson Aguilar is open in the end zone, and that trick play's run to get a big play out of it, not the easy 10-yard out route. So I'm interested to see when they don't get four interceptions on the opposing quarterback. quarterback if Mac Jones can keep the team in these games, because eventually he's going to have to take chances down the
field.
Absolutely.
They're not going to just be able to run. It's because it's been very formulaic as I'm watching it. It's a run. You know, they pass. They do pass on first down a little bit, but they start off, you know, it's run first down, run second down, and then a pass on third and short. And then it's kind of the same thing over and over again. So I'm hoping that they'll maybe open up the playbook as he gets a little bit more comfortable. But you're absolutely right. He is tentative to take these shots downfield, and they're not going to be able to do that all season long. They go up against the Saints next week, who obviously laid an egg against the Panthers this past weekend. But we've seen that they could put up a bunch of points when they need to.
See, I really wish. I mean, we're still.
I think
getting
that defense
show.
Is going to make. I think our defense is going to make Jameis Winston look like a complete and total fool, and he's going to throw maybe five picks if Zach Wilson
we're
threw
still,
four.
You know, we're in the COVID era now with this show, where we're doing it on Zoom, and we're all in our own separate places. Drew's off in Vegas, but we used to be in a studio. We used to be in, you know, be able to touch each other, talk to each other. We also had a soundboard that we could use. And my God, do I miss that day, because this is the week where we get to bring back RIP up in the heavens, Danny Green, and he gets to say they were who we thought they were, because the New Orleans Saints were who we thought they were. And there were some other teams that showed their true colors this week after surprising us in week one. New Orleans stinks. And I don't know what happened in that 38-3
Sean
game
Payton
against Green
even
Bay.
Admitted that they stink.
They stink, Drew. What do
but
you
hey,
think about that
guys,
New Orleans Carolina game?
Listen, in this show, we're always trying to learn, put it in our memory bank, and adjust for future for the year to be more profitable. Right? Is it any coincidence? Is it any coincidence? Jameis Winston, Ben Roethlisberger, Ryan Tannehill, Kirk Cousins, Jim, and all those guys. What do those guys have in common? They're all, by definition, mid-tier quarterbacks, right? As underdogs, 1-0 covering the spread. As favorites, 0-1 covering the spread. I think the lesson here is simple. Fade those guys when they're favored and back them when they're underdogs, because I just cannot get over the difference in Tannehill and Cousins. I mean, guys, the worst pick I had in the contest by far.
Cousins.
No, I'm not talking about Kirk Cousins. I'll talk about that later with Dr. Dangle.
Yeah.
The Pittsburgh Steelers, Tony, your darling, that offense is abysmal. They might be the worst offense in the league, and it's not going to get better soon for them if they don't. I mean, Big Ben just looks done. I'm sorry. They can't move the ball.
I don't agree that he looks done. I do agree that offense is in trouble. That O-line gives them zero time to get anything going, and especially in the running game. Najee Harris barely found any ability to find holes in that, and I don't think it's Najee Harris's fault. Jonathan Abram, the Raiders' safety there, was just coming through and salmoning people all over the place. But there's players on that Pittsburgh team that are making moves. Juju
that's
has been on fire. It's a Hard Knocks reference. I bring it back here.
Yeah, that's
Juju,
a throwback.
Juju has been on fire and playing really hard. Claypool and Deontay Johnson are aggressive, and I think Ben is making just enough plays to make it happen here. We see Aaron Rodgers missing throws on Monday night as well. But I think Big Ben can do enough. It's just that offensive line's killing it. What kills me, though, obviously T.J. Watt coming out of that game was a big change in that game. But that defense, it had so much success against Buffalo because they were able to get pressure with only four rushers and everybody else backing off. But they like to disguise who's rushing out of that four. It's not always the four down linemen. And then sometimes you're getting these DNs, these big, heavy guys now back in coverage. And the Raiders, if you watch that game back, were attacking anytime that happened. Whether it was a Melvin Ingram or a T.J. Watt backing up into coverage, that is not their safety zone. And that's where the Raiders were making big chunk plays to, like, Foster Moreau, of all people, on a back route touchdown. That is off of a guy who should be rushing the ball and not in defense. So I'm a little bit worried that defensive scheme is getting figured out by teams, especially teams with good offenses. But you're right, Drew. Bad pick to take Pittsburgh -5.5.
It's like I don't learn from the fucking playoffs. I took him in the playoffs last year against the Browns. Not great. Not great. Can we talk about David Culley? This was featured on a rival podcast. You might have heard of it. Pardon my take. They don't really quite have the following we do yet, but we're hoping for those guys. But did you hear that David Culley for the Texans on 3rd and 17, they had a 15-yard penalty to make it 4th and 2, and they declined the penalty to punt. They accepted the penalty to punt.
2-0 against the spread.
Absolutely.
Your
absolutely.
Houston Texans.
Absolutely.
Making me money.
Now led by Davis Mills.
I will not be betting on Davis Mills anymore.
Meanwhile,
Poor Tyrod Taylor. But hold on. I want to get to the thing we had this segment about, okay? We were talking about teams that we are who we thought they were. I want to do an MFK of teams that still are surprising to me. Because there's a handful of 2-0 teams, teams like the Rams. Those teams we expected to be 2-0. But there are four teams that are surprises here with an undefeated record 2 weeks into the season. So very quickly, I want to see who you guys think are for real of these four teams. I want to marry, fuck, kill these four surprise 2-0 teams. Two of them are in the AFC West, the Denver Broncos and those Las Vegas Raiders. The other one is those Carolina Panthers led by a very scary defense and Sam Darnold.
Sam Darnold
is undefeated. And the last one is the team that Drew picked over and over again. It was his Brinks truck pick before the season to take the under on this team, the Arizona Cardinals led by Kyler Murray. 2-0. So please, I'm going to go to Dr. Dangles first here. Marry, fuck, kill Carolina, Arizona, Denver, Las Vegas.
I think I'm going to marry the Arizona Cardinals. I love them right now.
Wow.
Kyler Murray is playing out of his mind. The defense is very good there. Let me see. It came close, right? It came close this past week. Minnesota had to miss a field goal for them to win that game. It came down to the very end, sure. But I'm liking this Arizona team. I'm liking what I'm seeing out of their offense. And again, yeah, their defense is nuts. I'm going with Arizona. I'm fucking the Carolina Panthers. They are so much fun to watch, and their schedule is not that demanding down the road. Honestly, the toughest part of it is having to play the Buccaneers down the stretch, the end stretch of the season twice. The rest of it is fairly manageable with a couple of hurdles along the way. And guys, I think I'm going to kill the Raiders. I don't know. I cannot get behind John Gruden and Mike Mayock. Damn. And I just don't think I don't think that whatever they're doing is sustainable there.
It's firepower.
It's great right now, sure. Yeah, absolutely. But eventually, they're going to run into an issue, right?
Shea for the Sharp, where are you going with this MFK of surprise teams here?
You know, I'm gonna actually mirror Dangles in two of his picks. I'll just start. I know it's MFK, but I'm going to start out, who am I sleeping with in the biblical sense, making relations with? And it's absolutely going to be the Carolina Panthers. And how can you not? Tony, you're the one, I believe, said, like, I mean, this Darnold thing is interesting without Gase. And I think our boy Hitman had a tweet, was like, if Darnold keeps this up, which I'm not a believer yet, Hitman isn't either. But I mean, if he really keeps this up, Adam Gase literally should not be able to, he shouldn't coach Rocket football. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah.
So, but I'm very intrigued by Rule, by that defense. So I'm absolutely going to sleep with them. And I'm with Dangles here. I'm going to kill the Raiders because we've seen this before. Mm. We've seen them start hot. We've seen this offense be explosive. Yeah. Teams figure it out, and I don't think Gruden has the brain capacity to adjust in midseason. I really don't. And so, I mean, listen, Carr's been awesome. I mean, you could argue he's a top five MVP candidate after week two, but really, besides the deep ball of Ruggs and the monster that is Darren Waller, like, their running game doesn't really do anything for me. Their defense is shoddy. Their offensive line's got question marks. So we've seen this before, the Raiders. I am absolutely going to kill them. I'm actually not going to speak on my dreaded team, the Arizona Cardinals, because I'm very angry with them. So I'm just going to put them away. And again, I'm tying my lot, guys. I'm with them. I'm in it for the long haul. The Denver Broncos, man. I think this is a playoff. Yeah. This is a playoff team. It's a 10-win team all day long. I'm very excited about my season win total. I don't think Teddy Covers is going to do anything crazy. But here's the thing about Denver. I really think they're in a position now. They're going to win games they're supposed to win. They're not going to beat themselves. I don't think you're going to see them, you know, pull off any crazy blowouts or upsets. I think they're a tough team to gamble on all year as a favorite. I think you'd take them as a dog all day, but I really think this is a 10-win team. I think they will be built as the season goes on with that home field advantage in Denver, the altitude, potentially some weather. I like the Denver team. So marry Denver. Fuck the Carolina Panthers, and I will kill the Raiders.
Yeah, again, sorry, Mrs. Crickson, for the swearing, but let me give you the correct answer to this question, because I would love to marry Denver and the Raiders, but they're in a division with the Chargers and the Chiefs, and I think those are four really good teams. The Arizona Cardinals are also in a very, very good division, but those Carolina Panthers, I mean, you got Tampa Bay, but Atlanta and New Orleans are going to be doormats to the Carolina Panthers. I'm marrying this Carolina Panther team. I love that defense over there. Derrick Brown is an amazing D tackle, just destroying the middle of the field. And they have J.C. Horn on the outside, Jeremy Chinn as a safety. They have guys all over the place making plays on defense. And then on the offensive side, yeah, Christian McCaffrey helps when you have him healthy and running. The offensive line is good, but Sam Darnold and that litany of weapons is actually making progress under this Joe Brady offense. I love watching this whole team play, and I really think Carolina could beat up on Tampa Bay when they play each other, but I think Carolina is that 10-win team we're talking about. Carolina, to me, has been the most impressive team so far this season. Now, they haven't beaten anybody of note, really. I don't think New Orleans is very good, but just seeing them play and seeing the blue-chip players they have on the field, I'm excited to watch this team play against contenders, and we'll be seeing that in the next few weeks of the season. Carolina is the marry to take. I'm picking between Denver and the Raiders to fuck, and I got to go with the Raiders just because I believe in Derek Carr more than I believe in Teddy Bridgewater. I understand how much I hated the Raiders going into this season. I took the under on them as well. That offense is just clicking on in ways I didn't think was possible before. And the O-line is healthy, and the running backs, even without Josh Jacobs, they're doing what they need to do. And Derek Carr, he can't be beaten right now. He is throwing the ball as good as anybody out there. And they beat a Baltimore defense. Yes, that was an injured Baltimore defense, but still an always good defense. And the Pittsburgh Steelers, who shut out Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills the week before. I think Derek Carr can produce. I think Derek Carr is a winner. I'm fucking Derek Carr. The Cardinals is who I'm killing.
Yes.
I think Kyler Murray is an MVP candidate. But the rest of that team, I think they're just walking on a very narrow rope here. And one step to the left, one step to the right, and it's like a house of cards. It's all going to fall apart. They have no running game whatsoever. That defense can go from having 5 sacks against an injured Taylor Lewan to not pressuring the ball at all against Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins was killing them when it came to throwing the ball. Dalvin Cook was gashing them 10 yards a pop, and this is a team that could not move the ball at all the week before. I'm a little bit worried unless Kyler Murray can pull a rabbit out of his ass every single game. I don't think Arizona can keep up.
And you don't think
this.
He can? I mean, he if there's anybody in this league who can
That's
do it,
thing.
I feel like it's Kyler. You know, he's a guy that can will his team to a victory. And I don't think
squares.
You can necessarily say that about any of these other quarterbacks that we are talking about right now.
But
he is an X factor that gives his team that
we've
advantage.
We've seen Derek Carr go down 2 weeks in a row and then get right back up and keep playing. Teddy Bridgewater,
this
big
time,
guy. Sam Darnold, big guy. Kyler Murray is not. He has not been hit yet. And we saw
Derek
last
Carr
year,
perpetually
after 16
injured.
Games, after 16 games of constantly putting his body on the line there, eventually he gets a little bit slower, a little bit the stutter step isn't there, and that offense degrades. That's what I'm saying. I don't think Arizona can keep this up for a 17-game slate. That's why I am killing them. Let's move on to some things. I'm going to be talking about the NFC West, too. We've recapped the games a little bit. It's time to cure what ails you. It is time to go to the old doctor, everybody's new favorite segment, Dr. Dangles, coming up next.
Dub C to the G, West Coast Gamblers.
I'm Ken Harbaugh, host of Warriors in Their Own Words, a podcast that presents the unvarnished, unsanitized truth of what we have asked of those who defend this nation. As a country, we need these stories more than ever. Stories from Americans who have borne the battle, including 30-year-old remastered interviews with veterans from World War I recounting their time in the trenches of Europe, and with veterans from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and from our most recent conflicts in Iraq, Afghanistan, and other battlefields Americans may never have heard of. Hear their stories by listening to Warriors in Their Own Words wherever you find podcasts.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for coming back to another session. I was a little worried after last week, and things got a little real and emotional and raw at times. I know there were some feelings felt and some things shared and some thoughts aired, and I'm glad that you both decided to come back, Tony Squares and Schaefer the Sharp, for another session with me, Dr. Dangles. Now, I want to begin this week with therapy's no laughing matter, by the way, and I want to begin this week with you, Schaefer the Sharp. We started with Tony Squares last week. I'm curious because now we've moved on to something new. You know, whatever you were dealing with last week, I hope you've worked your way through. But it seems you've got something new that you'd like to talk about.
Yeah, doctor. Well, first of all, I appreciate you letting me go first, because sometimes I don't feel like I'm heard, which I know is rare because I have a lot to say. But I have this thing, doctor, where on my NFL betting card on Sundays, I have to bet purple. And it's not even for or against. I just see purple in the card and I have to bet him. I'm talking, of course, about the Minnesota Vikings. I take him in week one and they look like Whoopi Goldberg. And I bet against him in week two and they sound like Prince. And I guess I'm confused why I have this impulsive like reaction to the color purple where I have to bet him. You know, I don't know if it's if I'm in the Midwest now and, you know, Minnesota is kind of close to me in like geographic location. But honestly, doctor, when I bet on the Vikings or for the Vikings or against the Vikings, it just seems like a Viking horn's like going right in my butt.
Now, Drew, what would you say to that bet if you made it this week and it were sitting here with us in this room right now? What would you tell that bet?
I would say it's one thing to cover bet -3.5, but it's another thing to lose. Like if you can't even win the game outright, you have to lose but not cover. And it's just, I'm just sick of it. Like good teams win, great teams cover, and this team's not great. And all I want to, hindsight's 2020, doctor, and I like to live life in the windshield, not the rearview mirror, but
well,
I can't keep away from the color purple. I can't keep away from
Let me prescribe something that might help you keep away from the color purple, and that is look at their schedule, you idiot. Oh my God, the rest of this season is unbearable for them. They have to, they have the Seahawks coming up next week, the Browns after that, they get the Lions, but later on in the docket, Panthers, Cowboys, Ravens, Chargers, Packers, Niners, Steelers, Bears. Do you want to play any of those teams?
No, I don't.
The Minnesota Vikings with no offensive line. Do you want to play any of those teams with Kirk freaking Cousins or a terrible defense and Mike Zimmer, who seems to have given up on his team? I don't think you want to look at any of those. So I'm sorry. Wow. I'm getting a little emotional, but I think you should read their schedule. A good prescription of take a look at their schedule will prevent you from making bets on the Minnesota Vikings and anything purple going forward. Although I don't necessarily want it to drive you away from the Baltimore Ravens, because we could have a bleed over effect here. I just want you to make sure you compartmentalize that purple that you see on your betting card.
Tough love is what I need, doctor. Thank you for that. And never trust a coach. Never trust a coach that's face looks like he's been stung by 1,000 bees.
Now, Tony Squares, I understand you've also got something you'd like to talk about this week.
I don't know if I want to talk about it anymore, frankly, after that outburst.
I'd like you to talk about it.
I'm a little nervous here. I thought this was a safe space. You kind of came at the throat of my partner here, Shape of the Shark.
No, I need to hear it, Tony, and you need to hear this too. Tell him, please. We've been working on this together. Tell him.
Well, I feel like, again, I'm coming here with a personal issue, and it's a little tough for me to open up about it. But I was fooling around this weekend. I wasn't exactly being safe. You know, I'm a young guy. I like to have fun. And I got a case of the hook. I took the Rams -3.5, and they ended up winning by 3. And it really, you know, it's getting me good right now. I'm washing it away the best I can, you know, keeping everything clean and all that stuff. And I promise to be more careful in the future. But, you know, Schaefer wanted me to come forward and tell you what happened. And
this isn't college anymore, Tony.
Fix it.
This isn't college anymore. We can't fool around like this anymore. This isn't college,
Do you think
okay?
this is a problem that could be solved potentially by betting earlier on these games, where you maybe don't have to work with a hook and you're dealing with a full number instead? Those hooks all
Absolutely.
Get added later on in the week.
I can come into these situations more prepared. There are, you know, there's things that stop this 99% of the time, and I could do it earlier in the week. But, you know, I just having fun, having a few beers, and just decided to take the hook
anyway.
Well,
I think
that's
all the time we've got for today, unfortunately, gentlemen. Our time is up here. I know you sounded like you were close to a breakthrough there, Tony Squares, and I hope that we can get to continue to flesh out this issue next time that we visit each other, and I hope you'll come back next week. I'm sorry things got a little raw and a little emotional again this week, but will you please join me again next week for one more session, maybe? Humor me once more.
Well, if we have even time next time, Doctor.
My time is very valuable. Some weeks you're going to get more time. Some weeks you're going to get less time. I can't promise anything. Tomorrow
still costs the same.
This is true, but good therapy.
I love this session, Doctor.
And costs money. And we'll be back in just a minute.
West Coast Gamblers.
I'm Bruce Martin, host of Pit Pass Indy. Each week, I go behind the scenes of the NTT IndyCar Series and introduce our listeners to the biggest stars of IndyCar, which features the Indianapolis 500 as its cornerstone event. The men and women that compete in IndyCar may be the bravest athletes in all of sport, as danger lurks around every corner. They're able to look danger in the eye without flinching. That is why the NTT IndyCar Series features the best racing on the planet. Join me every week as we talk to the stars of IndyCar, including the legends of the Indianapolis 500, on Pit Pass Indy from Evergreen Podcast.
Okay, joining us today, because if you watch this game on Sunday, there was a lot of questionable calls thrown on both sides by the referees against two high-powered teams that the first quarter was a firefight, and then the rest of the game it was a lot of what's going on. And yet on the back end of the stick were our Los Angeles Chargers. Justin Herbert did not get the win, so we had to bring in a guest right now to help us explain what happened and help us explain what this means for the Chargers going forward. This man had boots on the ground on Sunday, was at SoFi Stadium to watch the Chargers Cowboys. He was on our show for the divisional preview, breaking down the AFC West back in the bank with our Mary Fuck Kill, and he is here today to help us explain what the hell happened to the Chargers. Welcome back to the show, the Sports Illustrated Chargers reporter, the Fan Nation favorite, our favorite, Mr. Fernando Ramirez. Welcome back, sir.
Hey, I appreciate you guys having me back on. That means I must have done something right last time, and that's why you guys decided to have me back on. So there you go. That's a little pat on the back for me right there.
That's right. That's right. Big pat on the back for you, Fernando. You were definitely a fan favorite of everybody after our
appreciate
last interview.
It.
And we appreciate you guys coming back and talking with us a little bit about a Chargers team and a game that kind of came up a little bit short yesterday. And Tony, you brought up the questionable calls. Man, I was just rewatching this game before we hopped on here with you, Fernando. And just on that first drive, you know, I talked a lot last week about how unforced errors cost the Patriots their game against the Miami Dolphins. And here on this first drive, I mean, we can question the call and whether it was a good one or not, but a pass interference call on a 4th and 1 from Keizer White, who couldn't really tell if he accidentally ran into Amari Cooper's route or if that was intentional, but like just a bad kind of way to start the game off there, where you have a chance to stop a team, get the ball back, and maybe go down on them and score, and instead they're able to turn that penalty into a touchdown.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was just it just felt like the Chargers needed, kind of like the same way with Washington last week, the Chargers defense kind of try to get into momentum, try to kind of gain a little bit, try and get better, and it took them a little bit to get adjusted to the way Dallas was running the football, and they ran it so effectively, almost about 200 yards, 2 touchdowns. Yeah. It didn't matter if it was Zeke or Tony Pollard; they were both running the ball efficiently. It seemed like the team struggled. They were missing Justin Jones, who was out with a calf injury. And you have Jerry Tillery, who's getting blown up into the second unit with the linebackers. I mean, Linval Joseph is Linval Joseph, but the thing is, he's the guy that is supposed to swallow up 2 blockers, and somebody else is supposed to come up free, and nobody was getting free yesterday. And it was a bad game all around for the Chargers defense. But at one point, I felt like they kind of did get set. They were fine. They were bend, don't break. They didn't allow any touchdowns in the second half. It was just bad luck by the Chargers. I mean, they were able to get that interception off of Dak. But other than that, I mean, it just seemed like there was a lot of confusion. So, yeah, the Chargers defense struggled at times, but they honestly, I mean, to allow a high scoring offense like that only scored 20 points, that's a good day's work for them. But at the same time, they should have limited the running ability a little bit more. If they could have, maybe Dak wouldn't have gotten so many yards, and maybe they couldn't have thrown as much against them. But yeah, no, the defense did struggle. There were a lot of questionable calls. I know you guys are going to point at that Jared Cook touchdown. We actually talked to Tony Corrente after the game, and he basically said that the thing that happened was that Jared Cook was coming into motion, yep, and Mike Williams moved at the same simultaneously. Mm. Well, you can't have him and KJ Hill were not set. So when you have a player come into motion, the two guys already have to be set. But the thing is, it happened earlier in the game with the Cowboys, and they didn't call it on the Cowboys.
No, they rarely call it when because Mike Williams was moving because he's doing the thing where he's, am I on the line or am I behind the line, sir?
And he even pointed at the referee, and he goes like that, and he moves back.
Yeah. But it's rarely called.
Yeah, it's rarely. But Tony Corrente's group does call it a lot. It's just it's a typical Chargers game. It was a typical Chargers game, and that's kind of why Brandon Staley was brought in, to eliminate all the dumb the dumb ways you can lose a game. But it's like he said, or it's like you notice they're still learning. He's still learning. He's learning how to be a head coach. So obviously if this continues, then okay, raise your eyebrow. But I think one game, I'm kind of like, okay, let's see what happens next, what the next move is, before you really can get on him about same old Chargers or whatever, because he is a new head coach.
When it comes to the next game is a big one. That's why we brought you in, because we wanted to sort of dedicate this segment to the Chargers and Chiefs coming up. The Chiefs are now coming off of a loss. That the game that they probably should have had in Baltimore, the Chargers probably should have had this game against Dallas. Now it's a divisional matchup between these two guys who are both looking for answers, and neither one wants to start the season 1-2, especially in a division where the Raiders are already 2-0, the Broncos are already 2-0. Like, you got to get wins where you can here.
Weird division
and
this year.
Yeah.
The two biggest question marks I had from this game, you're not going to have the same referees each week, obviously, but when it comes to the lines on both the offensive and the defensive side, we haven't talked about the O-line yet, but the D-line, like you said, was getting pushed all around by this Dallas front, and it was the right side of the Dallas front, too. Joey Bosa is getting blocked on run plays.
Imagine
by Dalton
Schultz.
Imagine
that with Zach Martin back. What a difference he made coming back. You saw that week to week. Zeke does nothing week one. And granted, you got two different kinds of defenses, but I don't know about you guys. I certainly saw the impact of Zach Martin being back on that offensive line, and just the push they were able to. You mentioned on the right side, he's their right guard. That's directly attributable to him.
Yeah. I'm just wondering, I know Brandon Staley runs the same scheme he ran when he was in Los Angeles with the Rams, and obviously that front four is a lot different than the front four he has with the Chargers. And that scheme might not fit what the Chargers have currently, because those D tackles and D ends are getting pushed off the line. Are you a little bit worried that guys like Bosa and other playmakers on, they need to sort of step up, or are they going to be able to get run on by this Chiefs offense next week? Or do you think this was one time Dallas got the best of them, and this defense is fine to play the run in the future?
I think it's too early to kind of know if it is, just because it worked last week against Washington. And Tyler Heinicke had 11 for 12, but he was disrupted in a lot of those pass plays was him BSing, moving out of the way, and then able to find a guy, and he was able to make the throw. But like last week, you at times you weren't really concerned about the defense. You were concerned about the offense kind of getting jump started, and you're like, why aren't you guys scoring more points? Right now, I'm a little bit, if I was Brandon Staley, I'd be a little bit more nervous about, why is my team only scored 37 points in two games? What is going on? Like, why are we not scoring the football? If I was Brandon Staley, that's what would have me a little bit nervous, just because you're looking around, you're like, okay, dude, like against Kansas City this weekend, you're not going to win 20-17. You're gonna have to go up there and score points. And I mean, I know everybody says, oh, Kansas City's defense is worse, but man, Honey Badger had two picks yesterday. The defense is still they're not what they used to be, but they're still going to be good. The Chargers really are going to need to be very disciplined this weekend, especially because you can't turn the ball over against Kansas City. It's funny, I think the Chargers have only punted twice in two games, yet all you're getting out of this is 37 points. So it's like you're settling for field goals, which, I mean, I guess Tristan Vizcaino needs the reps and everything, but man, you need to put up points. Justin Herbert right now, I think he's thrown for over 700 yards, but he's thrown two touchdowns and three interceptions. Yeah, and it's kind of like, what's going on? And the thing is, I mean, the Chargers are moving the ball up and down the field. They really are. It's just once again in the red zone, it's like their playbook just completely cuts in half, and you're kind of like, okay, dude, like, why aren't you guys scoring the football? And so, I mean, Brandon tried to put it as easy as, oh, it's just about running, maybe running the football a little bit more in the red zone. I'm kind of like, yeah, but, I mean, why you have your – yeah, and that's why you have your quarterback. I mean, I don't know how much you're going to be able to run the football in the red zone. It's more about your quarterback and kind of – trying to be a little bit more decisive with your routes. I mean, they had good play calls last week. I remember the one to Keenan Allen on that first drive. He goes back as a running back, and he does a halfback angle, and I was like, oh, my God, that was a great play. What does that do? It sets him up at the three-yard line. Boom, you run it in with Austin Eckler. Okay, that way, yes, it could work. You can get push, especially if you're running behind Rashawn Slater. But, man, you have to get down to those areas, and once you get to the 20, it's like – literally, like, you're freezing at certain points. So the Chargers need to do a lot better, especially because, like you said, Kansas City next weekend, they're going to be pissed off. The fans are going to be pissed off.
Before we let you go, I want to pinpoint one other thing that needs to get addressed. I know Bulaga's coming back eventually, but he's injured for right now. And I read your article on this, breaking down the position groups and how they played against Dallas, and you rated the offensive line an S for Storm Norton. And I'm a little bit worried that right tackle might be a problem in this Kansas City game, because they got some pressure on Lamar. Lamar Jackson obviously is one of the most athletic people in the world. He got out of the pressure on Sunday night. Herbert's not going to have that same chances. Do you think Herbert might need a little bit more time in that pocket, or do you think this offensive line just needs a few more weeks to gel?
So it's funny. You guys are going to be like, well, what does he know? But my brother is a former offensive lineman. He played in high school. So I asked him, what is Storm doing bad? He's like, the thing is that yesterday you guys watched Micah Parsons took him apart. But the thing is that what he was waiting for was he was overstepping, waiting for Micah to try and beat him with a speed around. Well, Micah noticed that, or his coaches noticed that, and they said, bro, cut back inside. So he would come out like if he was going to rush outside, and he'd jump back inside. Well, when you're already set like an offensive lineman back, there's no way you're going to be able to get, especially with his speed. There's
so
nobody,
he was telegraphing his protection,
exactly,
essentially.
Exactly, and that's the thing with Storm Norton is that, how is it? I don't know how to put this.
It's Chris Jones on the DN now. Going from rookie Micah Parsons with speed to Chris Jones, who's an absolute beast.
But I'll tell you one thing.
You got to figure it out.
I'll tell you one thing. It might be a little bit easier. Not easier, but the thing is, Mike is so quick and so speed. Like, that's what he struggles against. When he played against Montez Sweat and some of these guys some bigger guys against Washington, he didn't do as bad, just because in those, like, you can win some, you can lose some. Here, man, you're losing because you're doing the same exact thing, and Madness is doing the same thing over and over again. Well, that's what he was doing, and honestly, and the thing is that we've asked, and today it was asked, would you guys consider moving kicking Matt Filer out to right tackle and then bringing in Braden Hymus, who's a rookie from Nebraska. He's a blue collar guy that he'll play hard, and putting him at left guard. And Brandon Staley said, if it ends up getting that bad, then he didn't say it like that. He said, if we're exploring everything, if we do need to make a change down the line, then we'll make it.
But it sounds to me like that answer and sort of what you were getting at in that answer from Staley is that he was sort of implying we would prefer to not be in that situation.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Where we have to move, we have to move this guard. It sounds like that's based on what you said.
Exactly.
Kind of what he was alluding.
And like Tony said, Brian Bulaga is supposed to come back, and it's like, but how long is he going to last?
Brian Bulaga traditionally missing games in the regular season. A Green Bay fan like myself would know that. Before we let you go, we had a segment earlier in the show where the three of us did a little MFK of the surprise 2-0 teams, two of which are in your division, Denver and the Raiders. Out of those two teams, which one are you more scared of to sort of take the spot that the Chargers should getting into those playoffs? Are you more scared of Denver? Are you more scared of the Raiders?
I think Denver. Denver's defense is something else. I mean, I saw Patrick Surtain had an interception yesterday.
He did.
It was a pretty nice one too. I mean, Asante Samuel Jr. for the Chargers should be getting a little bit more like love in a sense.
Really well.
He played really well yesterday. But
first
I think everybody should be a little bit nervous about Denver. I mean, Teddy Bridgewater has now all these weapons that I don't think he's ever had, and he's literally passing it around. He's literally playing hot potato, like, Who wants it? Like, he's serving it up like the ice cream man. What do you want? Oh, you want it? Boom, got you. Hey, you over there, what do you want? Noah Fant, got you. Melvin Gordon, you want to run the football? Yeah, man, I got you. Boom. I mean, Melvin Gordon didn't run the ball that all that well yesterday. My brother let me know about it because of his fantasy football team. But I just think at one point Denver is going to pull – or Las Vegas is going to pull – like, the Raiders are going to be the Raiders, and they're going to do something to where
– stupid.
It just all unravels.
Well, it's going to be an interesting few weeks and an interesting few months for this AFC West. Four teams that are seemingly contenders at the start of this season. Again, Chargers and Chiefs, week three. Probably the marquee matchup of week three. I can't wait to see
it. Who would have thought that it was the bottom seller game of the week? Bottom seller, because both of them were at the bottom of the AFC West. Who would have thought?
It's going to be a blast, man. And again, the loser of this 1-2 is in a hole. Like, it's a pivotal matchup this early in the season.
Especially because if it is the Chargers, they have the Raiders on Monday Night Football. Do you guys know who the Raiders play this weekend? They play the Dolphins, and there might not be a Tua. So if the Raiders come in to SoFi at 3-0, and you're 1-2 losing to the Kansas City Chiefs, it's going to be rough. It's going to be rough.
That game's in Vegas, too. Cross country. The Raiders game is in Vegas. So they have to travel cross country for that one. Another good opportunity for Las Vegas to win in front of their home fans.
If Tua was playing, I don't know if I'd give him much of a.
Poor Tua, man.
But Fernando, we thank you for coming on the show, talking a little Charger game with us. We will definitely have you on in the future. Thank you for being here. And as always, to the listeners, thank you for listening. Coming up next, guys, your favorite game. It's time for Gravestones.
Dub C to the G, West Coast Gamblers.
Hey there, my name is Michael Laminato, and this is Pit Pass F1, a brand new podcast that'll take you closer to the action of the world's most prestigious motorsport. From Monaco to Miami and Australia to Azerbaijan, Pit Pass F1 is on the ground and has you covered. Esteemed F1 journalists Julianne Sarasoli and Chris Medland will take you inside the sport every round. They'll keep you up to date with the latest news breaking in Formula One and the most influential views shaping the world of Grand Prix racing. Every Friday, we'll be bringing you a track guide and race preview, and Chris and Drew will be in your feed every morning from Saturday through to Monday to keep you up to date on all the day's action on and off the track. So if you want to be in the know on the latest in Formula One, subscribe wherever you get your favourite podcasts and visit us at evergreenpodcasts.com. Pit Pass F1, a brand new show for Evergreen Podcasts.
Well, thank you again, Fernando, for coming on the show. I really enjoyed talking to you, but we're about to talk about some teams that aren't the Chiefs, that aren't the Chargers, but instead are some of the teams that just aren't going to make it this year into the NFL playoffs in the year of 2021. Yes, that's right. It's time for everybody's favorite game, the game of Gravestones. If you've been listening to the show for a while, you know that Gravestones is the part of the show where each of the hosts select one team to say they are not going to make the 2021 playoffs and they are going into the ground. It is time to read a eulogy off for three teams in the NFL. Last week we did this already, so each of us have killed a team. I killed the Giants. Schaefer the Sharp turned into a beat poet to kill the Jaguars. And Dangles, who did you kill last week?
It was the Lions.
Ah, yes, the Detroit Lions. So this week we go in the same order as the winner of King of the Coast. Drew's going to be leading. I'm going to be going last. And that matters because if a team is killed by a host that goes before you, you cannot kill that team that week. So I'm kind of in a pickle here if they start taking teams that I want to knock off. Good news is there's still plenty of crappy teams out there. But without any further ado, it is time to open up the doors to the chapel, step into the holy place, and it is time for Gravestones.
Boys, it's an honor to bat leadoff after week two. Despite my excellent slam poetry last week, I'm going to go with a little more traditional eulogy in form of a popular chant originating in the Meadowlands. J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets. Zach Wilson has the Y-I-P-S, Yips, Yips. Yips. Coming out of college, he was crowned the Mormon Manziel. Well, Mormons are supposed to abstain from caffeine, chocolate, and premarital sex. And I firmly believe on Saturday night, Zach Wilson was drinking a Mountain Dew, eating a Hershey's bar in a brothel. He threw as many picks as Coach Salas has kids. And Robert Sala Bar needs a drink, many drinks. The Jets are deceased. May they rest in peace for the 2021 season.
Well, this week on Gravestones, I need not to write a eulogy. I need not a chant. I need not slam poetry, because fortunately for me, the head coach of the team that I will be killing this week wrote his own eulogy in a tweet sent from the team account earlier today. Hang in there with us. We're going to get better. The one thing about Jacksonville and the 904, go to sleep knowing there's not going to be any group working harder to get this thing flipped. Those are the words of a defeated man, a defeated team, and indeed, if there is one thing that the city of Jacksonville and Jaguar fans know best, it is working hard to flip a shitty season.
Yes.
It's not happening this year. It doesn't seem. Trevor Lawrence does not take care of the football very well. The defense isn't good. They can't move the ball down the field. The Jaguars are not making the playoffs this year, and it pains me to say it, but it is true.
Oh, today is a sad day. For it is a day that we say goodbye to a man that is beloved by the community, adored by the fans, and really a favorite of the three hosts of this podcast. So if you would join me now in taking your grande black coffee with two shots of espresso in it and pouring a little bit out into the ground for the rest of us. It is time to say goodbye to the man Drew calls Campbell and the man we know as Campbell. For the Detroit Lions, Jared Goff, Jamal Williams, my boy, on your rebound. DJ Swift and that defense of just nobodies. You're not making the playoffs this year. You gave it a hell of a first half on Monday night in week two. But by week three, that steam's going to run a little bit low. And those pump-up speeches aren't going to hit home like they used to. Sorry, Detroit. It is on to another rebuilding year. And it is time to go to sleep. R.I.P. And that is the end of Gravestones.
West Coast Gamblers.
And that is it for week three recap show. It's the Tuesday shows. A lot going on in the world of the West Coast Gamblers. I'm getting confused on the days. Look at that. Zach Wilson just threw another interception in the New England defense.
You know, I wanted to, we didn't have time in Gravestones. I wanted to mention this. I meant to earlier. I saw this great stat from the ESPN's Jets reporter, Rich Simony, earlier today. Zach Wilson's the fourth rookie top five pick with zero pass touchdowns and four or more picks in a game in the last 20 seasons. The last three quarterbacks to do it were all Jets. Sam Darnold, Mark Sanchez were the other two. Alex Smith did it in 2005. If that doesn't say something about the Jets quarterbacks and who they draft, I just don't know what does. But I loved that. I thought that was awesome and sad.
The Mormon Manziel. What could go wrong? Who gave him that nickname, by the way? That's the worst draft nickname ever. The Mormon Manziel.
I'll tell you one thing. He ain't going to be around for a while. But that's it for our show today. For Schaefer the Sharp, Drew Schaefer Crookston, for Matthew Dangles, D'Angelo Antonio, my name is Tony Cavallo, a.k.a. Tony Squares. Again, this is the show that went 15-6 in week two. Tell your friend, tell your mom, tell your dad, listen to us coming Thursday because we are hitting our best.
Certified to make your mom money.
Making mom's money.
Making
we
mom's
are
money.
The West Coast Gamblers, and as always, thank you for listening.
Dub C to the G, West Coast Gamblers.
Pit Pass Moto, sponsored by Moto America, is the show that keeps you up to speed on the latest in motorcycling and brings the biggest names in motorcycle racing right to you. From candid interviews with the top names in racing to providing insights into the trends and trendsetters driving the motorcycle industry, we have you covered. New episodes are available every Thursday at pitpassmoto.com and on your favorite podcast app. Ride on!